Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Modo Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them, while everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Modo Casino, the only app worth your time.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
I walked in, and then the doctor was like, "Well, you're not going to be on TV for a while." And then, and then I asked him, I was like, "When can I surf again?" And he said, "When you can look in the mirror and not throw up." And I was like, "Oh man."
Who are the Misfits? Carrie Byron, Tori Belleci. Together more than 20 years having fun together.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Mythfits. Carrie, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you Mythfits doing out there? I know I've got my hat on today, so I feel like I'm
so now you're like a New Yorker. Hey,
I don't know what the character is. You're an Italian New Yorker.
How you doing over there?
I've had too much coffee. I don't know what's going on, but I'm really excited for our guest today because, well, I guess she's more of a friend than anything else. Like, I love Ariel Tweedo. We hang out like whenever she's in town.
Yeah, she's awesome. We met her at the Upfronts back in either was Chicago or New York. And the moment you meet her, she's just so bright and bubbly and sweet and like up for any kind of adventure. We were in LA one night and for a fundraiser. And after she was like, "Come on, we're going to go to downtown Hollywood. There's this dive bar we have to go to." And
oh my God, so many nights start like that.
We just got wrecked. The girl can drink. She's tiny. She's so small, tiny. But she can drink.
For those of you out there that don't know who we're talking about Ariel Tweedo. She is part of the Discovery Channel alumni. She was flying high Alaska. She's just an incredible person. I don't know what you'd call her today, like a joy influencer. She's still out there. You can find her on social media. You can find her on YouTube. But just like, I follow her life. Her life is just about finding awesome situations and being a joyful, present person. She's so freaking cool.
Yeah, but I was watching on her Instagram. She went surfing and a wave came up and the board smacked her in the face. And I like followed this injury. You know me, I'm always getting injured. So I'm always like, for some reason, injuries pop up in my Instagram algorithm. But her injury, following the healing of her injury, was like unbelievable. Like
I was going to ask you which one, because she tends to fall into injuries quite a bit because she is straight an adventurer. She's like in the game all the time. And I met her at a hotel room in DC for the STEM Fest, and she walked up. Her leg was bleeding and she was barefoot. And I'm just like, what? Like, she's just always getting banged up because she's so adventurous. She's always surfing or like downhill mountain biking or hiking, climbing, like anything that you can imagine. I mean, the woman's been whale hunting, like pick an adventure. She is so crazy. I love this about her. I think it's going to be fun to talk to her about where she's
going. Wait, whale hunting? Is that still legal?
Well, I mean,
can you still do that?
You can ask her about this.
Yeah.
You know, she is from Alaska and she is, you know.
Speaking of Alaska, you know, since she was going to come on the episode, I started thinking about all the, you know, we had, I think, two episodes Alaska themed on Mythbusters. And one of my favorites was when we were testing if you're about to hit a moose, is it better to speed up and take its legs out so that the mass of the body flips over the car and you do less damage, or do you slow down? And
what a grisly myth. Like, just the premise is gnarly. Because, like, I mean, you know, when you're teaching your kid to drive, you're always like, okay, if there's a little critter, just, I know you don't want to hit it, but motor through. Like, you don't swerve, motor through. But a moose.
Yeah.
I don't know if people understand how big they actually are. They are huge.
And apparently, they're one of the deadliest animals. Like, they more people are killed by moose than a lot of other animals because they do come into neighborhoods and they're very aggressive and they will charge you and they will stomp you to death. I remember while we were up there doing research, we went to this neighborhood and there was a moose eating crab apples. And what happens is these crab apples will drop to the ground and then they ferment and then the moose will eat them and they get a buzz off of these. And so then they get super aggressive. Like they just like want to brawl.
Or, you know what? I think they're like people because some people are angry drunks. Some are amorous. And we met that one moose, Buzzwinkle, who just like comes and hangs out at the local pub. And just it's you know, it's staggering around through town. I was charmed by Buzzwinkle.
I remember we were trying to get shots of it. And Heapy, our cameraman, got out of the van and was like getting closer and closer. And somebody was just like, do not, like, what are you doing? Like, he's going to charge you. Like, if you engage, he will engage. Like, leave it alone. But we got some shots of him. Hey, remember that comment that said, listen? that's so good.
Okay, there was a comment. I pointed that out to you. Let me just, I am taking this in.
I just wanted to bring up one of my favorite comments from a previous episode, the life hacks or that hacking for saving gas. And I was saying something about along the lines, oh, the advice he gave us, which was listen to your spouse, listen to your friend, listen to, you know, somebody you care about, really listen. And then Carrie, you jumped right in and you were like, so anyway, I was doing something and somebody commented. They're like, was that on purpose? No, it's not on purpose. Oh my God.
Our comedic timing is just
natural.
Know
if that's comedic timing, Carrie.
I would like to point out, I screenshot that and sent it to you because I am taking in this and realizing I have total ADHD, and I tend to finish sentences. It is something that I am working on, this patience and not interrupting, but I'm really bad at it. I'm a work in progress.
That's
work
funny. In progress. So we went up to Alaska to do some research on crashing into moose. And so we went to a crash, like a yard of accidents, and they showed us a bunch of vehicles that actually hit moose. And it's like the moose are designed to do as much damage and kill people if you hit them with a car. Because when you hit their legs, all that mass of the body just slams into the windshield and just completely crushes the front of the vehicle. And we were like, whoa, this is nuts. Okay, so let's figure out how are we going to test this myth.
I was actually really surprised when we were trying to make the analog, because usually we make the analog out of some sort of like ballistics gel. Mm-hmm. Or some sort of medium that you can pour, but it was so heavy and so big that we had to transport it so far that, you know, we cut out those giant pieces of just like rubber so that we could stack them all together. And the sheer size, the volume, it just like the weight was, it was so much bigger than I expected. Because I mean, I live in California. How often do I come up on a moose? Mm-hmm. But once we got up there, I'm like, oh, okay, now this myth, it makes a little more sense to me.
Yeah.
A little more sense, because that's like crashing into another car.
And I remember we were looking online and we found a crash facility that tested crashing into animals. And so we got the designs from that crash facility. And so it was basically a blueprint and it was all these shapes. And what we had to do was put these shapes on to this half inch rubber matting. Draw it out.
Rubber matting. I barely know her.
Cut it. And then we would have to cut it out, drill holes through it, and stack them together to build the body. And then we had to like use cable to like actual steel cable to like cinch it all together to keep it together. And then the legs were a bunch of cut out rings and we stacked those up to make the legs. It was such an interesting way to build an analog that we had never done before. And I still love that build because it was just, it was like, whoa, how the heck are we going to build this giant moose? And these guys had already figured it out.
Yeah, it was different than how we would have approached it before. It was nice having sort of like a IKEA instructions.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
This is how you do it. Totally. It was a nice recipe.
And then the other thing which was interesting about that episode or that experiment was we had to time it because we had the moose hanging from a steel frame, you know, because it was so heavy that we couldn't be there to, you know, we couldn't prop it up with anything. So what we did is we built this steel kind of girder that we hung it from. And so as the car came up to the moose, we had to hit a quick release. And that way the moose was released from that grid or that, you know, that bridge, and it would crash into the car. And that was another like timing. I don't know if we timed it or we had like a pressure plate the car drove over. I think that's what we did. So that way it was like perfect timing. As soon as the car got to the moose was released from the beam that was holding it up.
Another myth where perfect timing is the only way that we can test this, and we have to just keep trying and just film it over and over and over.
I know. How many cars do we go through?
God.
But the
well, you know.
But the cool thing about that whole is this moose was made of this durable rubber matting. So we smashed the hell out of this moose over and over, and it did, like, we couldn't destroy it. This thing was indestructible.
We should have made Buster like that.
Yeah.
Just, you know, like, we could have 3D cut all of the pieces to make it perfect and cabled him instead of, like, those, I don't know if, like, the joints that we had made were so pinchy and rough, and I was constantly getting hurt on him. It would have been awesome to kind of have a big rubber buster.
That would have been rubber buster.
Rubber buster. I barely know her.
That
I know.
Would have been,
you guys, this is an inside joke. We've been, I mean, for the last 20 years, we've been telling, there's, you can't say the word rubber without that coming out of my mouth.
It turns out, just to let people know, if you're about to crash into the moose, try to avoid it. Don't crash. Don't try to drive fast through it because it won't end well. So it was that myth was busted. Okay.
This is the one time you can swerve from animals. I just want to point out, we haven't seen that episode in a long time, but I'm pretty sure that if you are watching this podcast, you've probably seen that episode 95 times and on a rerun within the last week. Every time my friends are at the car wash, they're like, oh my God, Mythbusters is on again.
We should see if we can if we have a slow motion shot of the moose getting hit by a car. Yeah.
All right, guys, coming up, you get to meet Ariel Tweedo, or you might already know who she is because she was flying high Alaska, where she did a reality show with her family, flying her airplanes all around Alaska. She's a pilot. She's quite the athlete. In fact, I believe she got discovered on Wipeout.
That's right. I remember that episode.
We're going to have to play so we can relive
to
that.
To her. I got so many questions for her.
So many questions, but she continues to create content as somebody who just runs around the world, just headfirst into adventure. She's got an IMAX movie. Ariel Tweedo is going to be a treat for all of you.
Carrie, tell me about your bedding. Are you so excited for your bed? You love sleeping, don't you?
I find my bed to be my sanctuary, and I've always really invested a lot in making it perfect, like getting the most comfortable mattress and making it the biggest bed possible and having the absolute softest sheets and making sure that every blanket I have has the perfect temperature to it so that, like, I'm the most comfortable at all times. Because I you know, you spend over half your life in your bed. So at least I do. It's got to be a fluffy, fluffy cloud of awesomeness.
Well, guess what, Carrie? You're in luck because we are partnering with Boll & Branch.
Boll & Branch has signature organic cotton sheets that are soft, breathable, and get better over time.
Upgrade your entire bed with pillows, blankets, and comforters.
Most customers start with just the sheets, but then upgrade the rest of their bedding because those sheets are so awesome. I also just ordered a waffle blanket. I want to be able to, like, take my bedding into the living room as well. You know, like a good Sunday morning kind of cuddle.
Upgrade your sleep with Bowl and Branch. Get 15% off your first order plus free shipping at bowlandbranch.com/mythfits with code MYTHFITS.
That's Bowl and Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com/mythfits. Code MYTHFITS to unlock 15% off. Exclusions apply.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hey, MythFits out there. This is Ariel Tweedo, clearly live from her van because she's always on an adventure somewhere. And
somewhere. Don't even know where I am. It was funny, like yesterday I started from Utah, then it said welcome to Idaho, then it said welcome to Wyoming, and then I kept was going straight, and then I was back in Idaho. And so I was like, I don't actually know where I am right now. I'm in one of the states.
You're my favorite. Just I think of you as just a tumbleweed or one of those like wild seeds that comes off of a dandelion, just constantly floating in the wind, looking for a place to root, but not probably just going to keep floating.
Well, thank you. I like that. Or a ding dong that's just like bouncing all over the place and just lost half the time. And I'm like, I don't even know what I'm doing, but one day we'll figure it out.
So you were born and raised in Alaska. Yeah.
Yep. In a little village called Unalakleet.
And what was that like growing up there?
The best. It was awesome. So the village we grew up in, the only way in and out is by airplane. So everyone in our family flew. We were super lucky because my dad isn't from the village. He was one of the only like white guys that weren't native to our village. So I always had a different perspective because I knew that there was a whole other world, Minnesota, out there. That was fun. But then, I mean, I went to school, 12 people in my class were all related.
Whoa.
We would leave pretty, like sometimes in the middle of the day to go hunting and fishing. You could skip class if you brought back an animal or fish or berries. That's subsistence leave. So naturally, I never went to class. That's probably why I'm not really good at science or history or stuff like that. But I could catch a fish. And then I just had amazing friends. My grandma is really a big part of my life. I learned how to hunt with her. My parents were so supportive, are so supportive. And then my sisters, one was always getting into trouble, so I learned not to do whatever she was doing. And then my little sister was just very into like reading and everything, so I had a good balance in the household. But it was mostly the best thing about growing up in the village is just I was in nature all the time. Like, we're right on the Bering Sea. We're on the foothills of the mountains. There's tundra. We grew up camping all the time, and so I just grew up just needing to be outdoors, and I'm still like that.
Your village was like 700 people and no roads in and out, right?
Yeah, there's like 650 people. You know, everybody, you're related to like 90% of them. Dating life, I always say that was pretty non-existent because my sister dated all the new people first, and so I'm like, I'm not gonna get her sloppy seconds. So yeah, the population was small, but it was actually for a village. My village was the hub. Like, we are the biggest village in our region. So there was, oh God, I should know this. There was like 17 other villages and we are by far the biggest. So we're the big city kids when it came to like going to wrestling tournaments or basketball tournaments. And so.
Wait, you're a wrestler?
I was, not anymore.
Of course you were.
I was actually humble brag. I was the first girl in our region to win first place at regionals and state. And then the next year, the guy crushed me. And then the next year, I almost crushed him. So, yeah, but.
Wait,
so
it's co-ed? Co-ed wrestling?
Oh, yeah. I never wrestled a girl. I think that would be terrifying.
So you're in your village. It's a small village, but you've got clearly a very, very big personality. At what point did you go out and find yourself a Discovery Channel show? Like, what is the epic journey of starting in the Village and getting to Hollywood?
So I got a basketball scholarship to a school in Boston. Well, at first I applied to schools that were the furthest away from Alaska, just because I just knew from a young age. I was so lucky because when I was, I think I was like 9 or 10, my cheerleading coach and a teacher asked my parents to bring me to Texas for the summer to visit her family. And my parents were like, take her. Thank goodness. So I got to go to Texas, and I thought it was the coolest thing. Like, we went to a rodeo. I cracked an egg on the sidewalk and got to eat it. It was so hot. Oh my God. There was like lakes and stuff. And so I just from a super small age, I just loved traveling. My parents let me go backpacking in Ireland when I was like 15 or something. So I just have always loved being out in the world and just seeing how other people live. And I'm just curious about the world. And so my parents were super supportive and they allowed me to go out there. And so I guess your question was about Hollywood. After I went to school in Boston for a year and a half, I was like, Boston is colder than Alaska and there's no mountains, but I loved it. I loved it. And I loved my friends and stuff. But I was like, man, I went to summer school in San Diego. And then one weekend, I took a train to Hollywood. Well, I tried to. I got kicked off the train because I didn't pay. So I got kicked off the train in Orange County. Ended up hanging out in Orange County for 5 hours because the next train wasn't coming along. And I found this little school called Chapman University. And there are people in swimsuits playing volleyball, just California. I'm like, okay, I need to transfer here. So I called my basketball coach and I was like, I must go. So I transferred, and then instead of going to class, I would just go into Hollywood and take the train and audition. And then I was an intern at Dr. Phil. That was a long story. That's a story there. But what? Somehow,
I don't think I knew that. You were an intern at Dr. Phil?
Yeah, and then I got fired the last week. But I probably shouldn't talk about that part.
No, definitely should.
You 100% need to talk about that.
So much stuff. So I would take the train every morning at 7, and then I would get to Hollywood, or I would get to downtown at Union Station, and then I would run to Hollywood or to Paramount Studios. I think it was there on Gower. And so
you wanted to be an actor.
I wanted to work on the Today Show and be like a Katie Couric, and then I wanted to be Eskimo Oprah. So I've always known that I can't act. You should have saw the auditions were just ridiculous, horrible, because I can't do anything other than this. And so I've always known that I wanted to work in entertainment, but mostly I'm more interested in interviewing and talking.
Right.
Well, on this one, I feel like I'm talking so much. Yeah, I just always known that I wanted to work in TV and film. And then, I auditioned for Wipeout and then got on Wipeout. And then,
Yes.
Yeah. I remember that.
I told Tori about this. Oh. He did not know about this.
No, I did know about it.
We actually have this clip.
I 100%. I remember seeing this after we met you and you told us. I went back and watched it. You got hammered, but you did really well.
Okay, I haven't seen it in so long. Uh oh.
Next.
Where's the pole?
Right in front of her. Let's see how she does.
Face plant.
Oh, dear.
You look so
You're
happy,
so cute.
Though.
You're so cute.
I was a little baby, a little of my chubby cheeks.
How old are you there?
I was 20.
You're 20 years old?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I was 20 and hadn't been kissed because I didn't get my first kiss till I was like 22, so... I remember though, the producers, they were like, the pole is whatever color that was. And I think I was looking for a yellow pole. And then, then I was just like, screw it. I'm just going to try to make it to this thing and jump.
Oh my God. That's so funny. Yeah.
And then, I loved it though. It was so fun.
Did anybody get seriously injured?
Oh yeah. Oh, I broke my thumb, I cracked a rib.
Oh my God.
But you didn't care. You got free breakfast burritos. And nothing
else. So worth it. Yeah. So worth it.
Yeah. So it was so fun though. I loved it and I loved being on the stage. And then I got in second and then I got invited back to do it again for like the All-Star thing. And I got in second or third. I can't remember. But then, so I met a guy on the show. He was a safety guy. And he had been on the Iditarod Trail and met my mom and my auntie. And so then we started chit-chatting and I told him that like about my family's airline. And then he was like, we should create a show together. So then we just started pitching the show all over for like a year and a half.
Okay, so let's talk about your family's airline. Because if people don't know the show or don't know what your family did, can you just like briefly explain what your family's airline did?
So it started with my grandpa, actually, my mom's dad. He was the first Native American to start an airline, which was Ryanair. And so all my mom's was there, her siblings, they all flew for it. They're part owners. So it's still going. It's a successful airline. Then my dad, he moved to Alaska to play hockey. He was a goalie and then, ended up in Northwest Alaska. He went to school, he played hockey, but also was a welder. So he moved to the Bering Sea to a little village called Shaktulik and started building all the crabbing boats and like the herring boats, salmon boats, and then ended up going south to our village and met my mom and also my aunt, were like my whole family, and then started flying for my grandpa.
Wow.
For my grandpa's, but he had too many ideas and then got fired. And then so him and his brother, they were like, yes, we'll buy a plane with our welding money and start being like their competition to my grandpa's company.
Wow.
And then, and then my grandpa's company had a big plane crash that killed a lot of people. So they got their passenger license stripped away and only did cargo. And so my dad started doing all the people.
So you have this story of your pilot family and this incredible background, and you're talking to the safety guy on Wipeout. Did this become a pitch or was this your idea?
It was both of ours, because there weren't a lot of reality shows. There's like your guys's Deadliest Catch. And I didn't really grow up watching much TV other than like the Today Show, because I just would watch it in the morning while my dad was watching the weather. And I like was too busy like hunting or fishing or wrestling or playing basketball to watch TV. So I didn't really know that there were shows. So he was just like, we should create a show. But we didn't really know. He just thought I was crazy, I think. And then I told him about our family and my mom is crazier than I am. Yeah. And so it was like, it was a collaboration. But I mean, I didn't get any of the credit. Now as an older woman, I'm like, damn, I should have got something. but whatever. I got to be a producer on it and like season two or something. But we collaborated. We went to shoot the sizzle reel when I think my sophomore year in college. Didn't tell my parents. I didn't even tell them. I like sort of dropped out of college and then showed up with the camera crew. And they're like, one, who are these people? And two, why aren't you in school? And I'm like, well, we're doing a little project about you guys. And they're not, oh my God, they're mortified. Yeah, they're like, no one's going to be interested in us. Our life is so boring. And they're like, two, get your ass back to school. Sorry, get your butt back to school. And yeah. And so it was just the first part was a mess. Then they met the crew, like our camera guys, and they immediately fell in love and had so much fun. So.
Hey, Tori, did you get an allowance when you were a kid?
No. You know, my parents gave us the basics, food, clothing. But if there was anything we wanted, we had to go get a job.
I mean, we were part of the latchkey generation where I feel like if I needed money, you know, I had to wait until my parents came home. I love that you can send money over your phone now. So if, you know, my daughter's like, I need lunch money right now. And I, you know, I would have starved when I was in school, but I can just like instantly send it to her.
We are partnering with Cash App, and this is an app that will allow you to easily transfer money to your kids' accounts for those emergencies. And it'll also help you see what they're spending their money on.
Yeah, so they're not taking that money straight to the candy store or whatever diabolical thing a teenager does with their money. For all the parents out there with teenagers, we know you're already trying to keep a million different things under control. Cash App is here to help make sure your teen's money and their spending isn't adding to all that craziness.
With the Cash App card available to teens 13 to 17 with sponsorship by an eligible parent or guardian, every transaction triggers a real-time notification for you to see, empowering your teen to practice independence while giving you peace of mind by keeping track of their spending.
You'll get real-time notifications to help parents stay informed, manage your teen's account directly from your own Cash App, and no monthly fees, minimum balance requirements, or hidden charges. Real-time notifications help parents stay informed.
New Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use code FAMILY10 in their profile at signup and send $5 to a friend within 14 days.
Terms apply. Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners, prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC, Cash App Visa, debit flex cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC, the Bancorp Bank, N.A. pursuant to a license from Visa USA Inc. See terms and conditions for the Sutton prepaid card, Sutton debit flex card, and Bancorp debit flex card. Discounts and promotions provided by Cash App, a Block Inc. brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part, guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You show up at your house with a camera crew. You are going to produce a sizzle reel. They have no idea that you're doing this. And you're like, hey, family, you're now stars of this show.
Yeah, that's exactly how it went. And they don't watch a lot of TV either. And this was our life. And it's just normal for us. So my dad was always like, who's going to watch this stuff? Like, no one's going to watch it. It's so boring. Like, my dad's not a big yakker. And so he was like sit down interviews for him were like, my job was to get your dad excited about like answering all these questions. Cause he would just be there just being like, yeah, we went and flew here today and I dropped off a wedding cake and some diapers. That's exciting. But then he would have stuff where it's like, no, he had to land like in the middle of the sandbar and like rescue people and stuff. And that's still like, I just remember the producers, they would be like, Jim, like a little bit more enthusiasm. Cause he would just was so nonchalant about everything. But it ended, yeah. I don't know. It's just his personality. Like he never got wavered in anything. Like he never got overly, and then, I almost said he never got overly excited about anything, but he was also a gold miner. And I remember the first time he found a nugget of gold, we were all at our cabin and then we just heard screaming. And then we see my dad throw his shirt off and run in the river. And he's just like crazy guy. And we're like, where is this coming from? He thought he got hurt or something because he like threw off his shirt. It was so funny. But other than that, he's never like, I never saw him like react.
That is hilarious. So now you have this sizzle reel. And then what was your next step to getting the show sold?
Forgetting about it for like a year because no one wanted it. And I don't even remember how we got funding to shoot the sizzle reel. I think we might have, like, this guy, Tommy, might have put some in it. I don't even remember because it wasn't a lot. It was me, him, a sound guy, and a camera guy. But yeah, then I went back to school. And then I remember I for spring break or something, me and a bunch of friends went to Miami to the Ultra Music like music festival. Yeah. And I was dancing in the pit with all these Cuban girls, like on the beach. And I danced so hard that eventually the sand was like above me because I was like dancing and made a hole. But then at one point I got a call and then I like hung up and I was like, whatever. And then the next day I was like, man, I feel like I got a call that was sort of important. And then I went back and then I called the person that called and there was someone at Discovery Channel. And they were like, hey, we left the show. And I sort of was like, what show? Yeah. And then yeah, I don't even. Then after that was just a blur. And then I left school and then came and lived with my parents for like 4 years. And it was the best. It was so fun.
You're a pilot. When did you learn how to fly?
I started flying young, like when I was like 11 or so, but legally I didn't get, so my story arc in our show was following me get my license. And uh-huh. I need to like clarify something. I love flying. I love aviation. I love being in the air. I love aviators, but never in my life did I ever say I wanted to be a pilot, like for a career. And everyone thinks that I'm this like good pilot. And I'm like, well, no, don't ask me any more questions. Cause of like, I got my pilot's license and I still fly. I'm not current right now, but everyone assumes like I know what I'm talking about when it comes. I'm like, no, talk to my little sister. She flies helicopters. She flies planes. She flies everything.
Oh my God.
But my dad and my mom were like, they would see me flying and just be like, let's stick to making TV shows and stuff because like, we love you, but you're too spastic. I remember my solo flight. I got so off course because the camera was there. So of course I have to be talking to the camera and like making like just goofing off. And then I remember I looked at the map and I'm like 100 miles off course. Like I finally looked and I'm like, oh shoot, I am not where I'm supposed to be going. And then I'm just, yeah. And then after that, my dad is like, let's just focus on like your passion. And my passion is entertaining, but I love flying. I love talking about aviation to younger kids, especially because we don't have enough pilots. I don't know. I love it so much, but it's never been my like heart and like it is with my like dad or my sisters or even my mom. My mom flew before my dad. My mom actually got her license. My dad actually never got his pilot's license. He just started flying. But my mom
what?
Flew before.
Oh, yeah. You can do that?
Yeah, maybe don't tell him, or you can. It doesn't even matter. But because I mean, that was a wild west back then. Like, I don't think a lot of people just started to learn how to fly. And so I think by the time someone actually like asked him if he had his license, I think he was already like so many like hundreds of hours in that it didn't matter.
That's funny.
No.
Well, you may not be. Your passion may not be being a pilot, but I see like your family, beyond being an entertainer, community is really important to you. And your Popping Bubbles organization is something that I always thought was really, really, really important. And I would love you to talk about that.
Yeah. So Popping Bubbles, I went to school with like 12 people in my class and I think 7 died by suicide. I've lost over like 34 close family and friends to suicide. And after my two best friends did it, I was like, I need to do something and I need to figure out like how I can help. And then there were so many people just telling you, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And I'm like, for me, I'm like, I want to create I think all of us live in our own little bubbles, especially people that grow up in the village. We're scared to leave our village, scared to leave our parents, scared to try new things, scared to talk to people that are different from us. And like, we're always being told like, no, 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 no. And I'm like, what if we tell people, yes, 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 like try new things, try new hobbies, like try things. And by the more you tell them, do more, give them more opportunities, the more that they're going to be like, life is awesome. Like I'm going to be so full of opportunities that like ending my life early won't even be an option. And so I started popping bubbles because that whole analogy is like, we all live in our bubble. I want to go around and pop people's bubbles. But for me, that was just flooding kids' minds with opportunities out there that are available to them, but they just may not know about, have spent their life being told that they can't do that because we're so isolated. So that became my mission for a long time, was just traveling throughout Alaska a lot in Northwest Canada. They reached out a lot more and wanted more help there. And then a couple of years ago, I just we'll probably get to my dad, but just I'm not gonna start crying. Yeah, after just went through that hard thing in my life, and I didn't have enough energy to deal with all that sadness, and so I stopped it. But then I just recently started I'm gonna try to bring the Popping Bubbles back, because running a nonprofit is a lot. It's a lot of hard work, and it's a lot of fundraising, which I don't like. I'm gonna change it, because I felt like the last couple years of Popping Bubbles was, I wasn't even with the kids. I ended up just throwing galas and trying to raise money, and I'm like, I don't like that. I want to be with the kids. I want to be teaching them and hopefully inspiring them, because I'm like, you guys look at me. I grew up in a village just like you guys. I look like you guys. I talk like you guys. And I'm living my dream. I get to live half the year in Nicaragua, and then the other half right now in my van. I have the opportunity to go to Spain and meet one of my best friends, Carrie, and travel the world and play for a living. And I've gotten to do everything I've ever have dreamt about. And I really feel strongly that these kids in these areas could chase their dreams too, if someone tells them that they could do anything. Just because you're a little different, just because you're from a different place, that doesn't mean that you have to stay there. And some of the elders would get upset when I would talk, just because they're like, don't tell our kids to leave. But I'm like, don't you want, there, a lot of them will come back with new experiences, new talents, they'll learn so much, and then they'll get to come back and teach their kids about what else is out there. And you learn so much just by traveling and seeing how other cultures live. I think it's super important. So yeah, so right now, to be honest, I don't have it as a nonprofit. It's right now is pretty dead, but I am my mom and dad, again, is all about serving your community. And these last 2 years, I feel like I've been pretty selfish, and I haven't been serving anybody other than myself, and just trying to figure out where I am right now in this life without my dad. And I still don't believe it's real. And I still wake up all the time trying to call him, and I just forget. But yeah, these last 2 years, I've just been selfish and trying to just keep myself happy and keep that spark alive and trying to find joy every day. And I think I am at a place right now, though, where I'm get back out there and be of service, go and help people. And that also brings you joy.
That's beautiful.
Your dad was very, very special, and I know how much he meant to you, because we talked a lot during this time. He was an awesome human being. I think he'd be very proud of the person that you are and the community that you're serving. And I've been watching your social media lately and seeing that you've been kind of getting back to those roots of the Popping Bubbles and being such an incredible example for people to look up to. You really are a great role model for that kind of, finding adventure and finding presence and finding joy. And I saw the IMAX movie that you did was out, and I'm wondering if the kids in the village got to see that.
They haven't. I wish my parents haven't even seen it. It's just hard to get an IMAX movie out to the kids in the village, but
yeah, I guess.
Not a lot of theaters out there.
Yeah, no, not a lot of theaters.
Can we get it on a streaming service?
I know, right? I think they are going to try to get it on a streaming service, because that was such a cool experience. It was me and the first Native American astronaut, John Harrington, traveling across the United States and inspiring kids to get back in nature. And I mean, that's all I want to do. And it's so fun. It's so fun seeing a kid for the first time climb a, climbing a rock, or I got to learn how to kite surf, and seeing kids' eyes, something sparks when they're I just did something that I didn't even think I was capable of doing. There's a light bulb that you could actually see a spark or a light in a kid's eyes that didn't believe in themselves. And then they did something that filled them up, and then they are glowing. And so I think it's super important to teach kids to like try hard things, suck at it, fail at it. And that's been a big thing in my life, is like failing sort of fun. Like it sucks, but then to see yourself progress is so rewarding. Like when I'm big into surfing right now, and I just started a couple of years ago.
You're fearless.
Fearless. This is what I wanted to talk to you about so bad. Cause it's like, I've been surfing when I grew up here in Monterey, I used to surf and I would get like injured, you know, if, you know, the board would come up and hit us, or, you know, the fin might cut you. I saw your surfing injury and I was like, oh my God, tell me what happened. And how is your healing process going?
I feel like if you look closely, I'm still like, I can't feel anything from here to here.
Oh,
and then for a while, I was going into the doctor because they had to put a syringe and like suck the blood out of my face because it kept filling up because there's a hematoma that's still sitting here. I get like a spasm every once in a while and people are like, you okay? Cause I'm always like holding my face, but you know what okay. So I'll tell you what happened. Then I'll tell you what I've learned from that experience. Okay.
Yeah. Cause for people who didn't necessarily follow this on social media, right? You got hit in the face with a surfboard and it was a gnarly looking photograph. Your face was black and blue swollen.
I've never seen an injury so bad.
Right. I was so worried about you. I was like, oh my God.
I look like the guy from the Goonies, Sloth or whatever his name was. I look like him times 10. I was in Nexpa, Mexico with my friends and they're all way better surfers. But that morning I was out running and I was like, ooh, if something feels off. You know, when something just feels, I don't know, but I was like, something's off, but I'm going to go out anyway. It was just bigger that day. But my friends were always pushing the limits and they're like, come on, we got to let's get to the next step. So I'm out there. The first waves are good. I catch a couple and then you could just feel the ocean pumping. And I'm like, oh, this isn't good. Cause you could see that wave coming and I'm like, oh geez, should I try to paddle my ass off and get to the shore? Or should I go to it and duck dive? So I picked the second one. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to paddle and duck dive. I'm on a longboard. So I can't duck dive. My duck dives are just me laying on my board and putting my head down. So this wave comes and I'm like, I'm going to catch this thing. So I got right on top of it and then just went, it's a big wave. I know it was double overhead from me, but then I went straight down. And so I get in the washing machine and I'm in a ball. I'm spinning around and I thought I was out of it. So I opened up. Right when I opened up, it went bam and hit me right here. And then an instant, I was just oh my God, it hurt so bad. But I made it up. And right when I looked back, the second wave came. And so I tried to throw my board and dive, but my leash got caught. And then it flipped me out of the water and then it hit me right between my eyes.
My God.
Yeah. And then I don't even know. I my dad or someone was in there telling me to fight. Cause I remember I couldn't breathe anymore cause I was down there and I was so out of breath and then it was just so light. And then I came to cause I lost my bikini bottoms. Cause I was I remember I couldn't find it. I was paranoid about I got up and I was bottoms, yelling at my friends I can't find my bikini bottoms. And they're like, just get out. I was right in the zone where
you're
the next
in shock.
Wave was coming. I was in shock. But then I was panicked about these stupid bikini bottoms. And then I don't even remember getting to shore, but I'm on shore and I'm yelling at everyone. I'm like, I can't find my bottoms. And then this is how great my girlfriends are. They all took their bikini bottoms off and they're like, we all don't have the bikini bottoms on. But then I look and it's on my leash. So it's on my leash.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just like,
wait a minute. So you're getting out of the water. Your face has been smashed twice. Your bikini bottoms are on your leash. Your friends are all waving their bikini bottoms around. This scene is insane. Did you know that you were in trouble? Was your face starting to swell up, or were you?
Oh, it was so big. It was.
How'd they get you to the hospital?
Oh, so I knew my face was messed up, but then we somehow found ice. There's one bar. We were in this little town, And then so we went there, got ice. And so I'm icing my face and all my friends are like, they look pretty bad. But I'm like, no, right. Like, I'll be fine. Because it wasn't, this is how stupid I am. This is for your listeners. Don't do this. So they all go back and surf again. Little Miss, I can't sit still, like, chill in a hammock for a second. I'm like, I should practice some headstands and do some yoga.
I'm upside down.
I'm upside down doing a headstand.
So you're just making it even worse.
Oh, this, I stood up. My face was triple the size. All the blood went right to my eyeball was bloodshot. And that's when I panicked. And I was like, I thought with all that pressure, my brain was going to cut off. And so that's when I ran to the water and I got my girlfriend. I was like, we need a hitchhike. The closest town was like 2 hours away. We didn't have vehicles. This guy let us sit in the back of his truck with chickens. He's flipping chickens. I terrified the chickens. They wouldn't go near me. But like, we made it to this hospital and they gave me a shot in my butt. And then they looked at me and they were like, I did a CAT scan or something, not a CAT scan, it was something, but they were like, nothing's broken. And we're all like, are you sure? Like, this doesn't look good. And so we just went back and I then went to sleep, woke up the next morning and it was massive. And my eyes were black and then my head was throbbing. And so I called my sister. I was like, I was like, can you book me a ticket to LA? And this is where it gets good. So then I booked a ticket, got to the airport, gave them my passport, and they're like, that's not you. And I'm like, this is me.
You were unrecognizable.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me on. They brought me to a room and they were like, you have to tell us who did this to you. And I'm like, I was in a surf accident. And they were like, you can't lie to us. Like, tell us who did this to you. And I'm like,
whoa.
I need to. Then finally I persuaded them to like get me on the plane. We took off. And then that pressure. It was the most pain I've ever been in. I thought my head was going to explode. And I thought my eyeballs were going to shoot out of my eyes. The flight
because
attendants,
they pressurized
they were like,
the airplane. Oh.
Yeah. Oh. I went into the bathroom and looked. That thing moved to the middle of my face, so my nose was big. And then I had blood coming from my eyeballs. And then I went to the flight attendants. I was like, my eyes are going to fly. Is it possible for my eyes to fly out of my head? And they're like, it's not possible. But they wrapped me with their like little handkerchief things. And they like held my hand. And it was so painful. And then we landed, and then I went to Craig Ferguson's doctor. I was like, who in LA would probably have a doctor? I walked in, and then he was like, the doctor was like, well, you're not going to be on TV for a while. And then and then I asked him, I was like, when can I surf again? And he said, when you could look in the mirror and not throw up. And I was like,
man.
He was so funny though, and I was like, yeah. And so then I would go to the doctor every other day for like 2 months, and they cut a hole in my mouth, and then they just would squeeze my face and just suck out everything with a syringe. And the first time we did it though, the doctor was so pumped. He was like, this is the most blood I've ever got out of anyone's face. And he like high-fived me.
God.
And I was like, it hurt so bad. But
how long ago was this accident?
A year and a half ago?
Yeah, my God.
Yeah, a year and a half ago. But honestly, I learned, number one, if I really don't care how I look anymore. Like, if my legs work and my arms, I'm going to be able to keep getting through this life. And two, if I ever see people that are, like, disfigured or that have a face thing or are just different, to talk to them. No one made eye contact with me for like 6 months. Like I used a scarf all over my head and stuff, but little kids, they would be like, whoa, what happened? And then I would tell them. But then adults, not one adult, maybe one lady asked me like what happened. But other than that, people would look at me and then just like look away. And I love people and I like talking to my barista for like just chatting to strangers and not, no one looked at me. And I felt so alone. So, but now I'm just so grateful that I've healed and that I could.
You look great.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
That's
I feel good.
Wild.
But what an introspective insight and a beautiful takeaway that you had from this experience. Instead of this is what I love about you and your positivity is you're so creative with finding the bright side, the lesson, the way out. It's just like you're popping bubbles. You're like, okay, now I'm going to treat people better. This is what's so awesome about you is you are just an adventurous heart and you always come up with a reason that it's a better thing. I mean, Tori, do you know that this woman gets up every single day without fail, doesn't matter, and goes running? It doesn't matter if she's sick or tired or hungover. This woman goes running every single day because she wants to find that presence and find the place that we are. It's so cool.
I love it. Well, it's the only consistent thing
that sounds
I have
awful
in my
to
life.
Me.
You could try it. I'm not married. I don't have kids. I don't have a home. And so nothing in my life is consistent. And so waking up and just brushing my teeth and then putting on my shoes and just going running is the only consistent thing I have in my life. And it's when I'm alone and I get to think and now I talk to my dad it's my happy place. And like Carrie said, I've broken my collarbones. My dad, when I broke my collarbone, he was like, you can't go running. Like your neck's going to, you're going to get more injured. But I'm like, I'm going. So he's like, well, get over here. And he would duct tape my arm to my, my body every morning for a couple weeks. And then being hungover, I always say the day I miss a day from running from being hungover is the day I will stop drinking. And I am not ready for that yet. I love my cocktails and my wine too much.
I have not been hungover enough. You know, that reminds me. One night we were hanging out. It was like one of the upfronts somewhere. And we were talking about how much they pay for alcohol in these villages because, it's like so remote. And we're like, ooh, what if we pitched? What if we started a business and we do these pop-up nightclubs up and around, Alaska, and then we pitch it as a TV show. And so we're getting paid to do these pop-up nightclubs, but then we're also doing a show.
We should reconsider this. I mean, I just want to see both of you guys more often, but I mean, didn't we call it like Club Baby Seal or something?
Yes,
I forgot.
Club Baby Seal. Jesus.
Yeah.
So I think the club would be called like Baby Seal, but Club.
Totally. Yeah.
Too dark.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
All right, MythFits, I hope you had as much fun with that as we did. When we first started this podcast like a year ago, we were interviewing Danny, and he told us, he's like, yeah, pretty much your first year of being a podcaster, you mostly just interview your friends. So this tracks.
She is so funny. It's like her like happiness is infectious. It's just like you can't, you're like hang out with her and you're just, you, it rubs off. She's so fun.
She's got a million crazy stories. Yeah. I mean, everything from being in the wild and being on adventures to like Hollywood.
Yeah.
She doesn't name drop. She's a humble person, but she has done crazy things with so many movie stars and TV stars that you've heard of, that she just people meet her and they just want her as a friend. Like you just want to collect her into your life.
Yeah, she's fun.
Tori, I do believe that it is time for a fan question.
We got a video question. This is exciting.
Oh, it's a video question this week?
Yeah, I always like the video questions.
Play it.
Hey, Misfits. Aaron again from Durango, Colorado. Just asking, what was the biggest mess that you had on Mythbusters?
That's funny. Thank you for the question, Aaron. I like
the
delivery.
He went in with props. So what's the biggest mess we've ever had on Mythbusters?
Biggest mess. I mean, we've had a lot of messes.
I mean, gosh, that's really tough to choose because, you know, we had Creamer Cannon where they had that glaze of marshmallow crisp kind of on the entire bomb range, but it was outdoors, so there was less cleaning. It has to be something. Tori, Chicken Cannon.
I mean, that was the grossest mess.
I mean, it was pretty explosive. It was in the rafters. It was in the pipes. It was like you'd find it later.
Yeah, but I'm thinking like big, like a large scale. I feel like when we blew up the cement truck, there were chunks of twisted steel scattered all over the quarry. And fortunately, the owners of the quarry were like, don't worry, we'll clean up. Because we were looking at it going, this is going to take days to get all this mess because everything was spread out so far. That's kind of what.
Okay, by definition, if you don't have to clean it up, is it a mess?
Well, because
like
somebody's problem.
I feel like a mess was more of like the stuff that we do in the shop where you're just like, oh my God, it's going to take 3 days to get all of this like fine dust from. Yeah, remember carving all those cannonballs
so
and
gross.
Just everything was covered in that awful mist of dust.
It was like, what are we doing? And Jamie and Adam are like, all right, we're done for the day. See you guys. Enjoy. Wait, you're not going to help us? You made this mess. We're going to clean it up?
Nope.
We're going to clean it up? What's up? Yeah.
Oh, God. Some of the days out on the Alameda runway where we had to eat, like, we had two semi-trucks hitting each other, debris everywhere, and even just rewinding up all of that drag line. Just spooling it. It would take hours and hours. And we were there until way late. It's dark. We're still just out there, just sweating, gloves on. Do you think maybe like semi versus semi, that one was the biggest mess?
That was a big mess. Yeah, that was a good one. Whenever it was big structures being destroyed, it was like a ton of cleanup. So, that was a lot. That was a lot on Mythbusters.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, pretty much. I feel like the list runs into the hundreds.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to rank them. But yeah, big crash. I'm going to go with big crashes make the most mess.
Yes.
Because they are the hardest to execute. They make the most mess and they're out on the runway. So we actually have to clean it up.
Yeah, right. So,
that was a good question, you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Please send more video questions. Those are great.
Yeah, we love to see you. The best way to do it right now is to email us, mythfitspodcast@gmail.com. At some point, I think we're going to create a portal on the Band of Mythfits Mythfits, our platform. Like, subscribe, follow. If you do like this podcast, it really helps us if you subscribe to either YouTube or please go to mythfitspodcast.com. You can subscribe there and get bonus content and extended episodes if you can't get enough of us.
And go
there's
buy
more
yourself
there.
Some merch. What are we doing here? Go get some merch so we can see you.
Yeah, I got
in the
a kid
street.
About to go to college.
We
help
know
me
who's
out
a
here.
Misfit. We know who's weird, who's strange.
Yeah, that's how you know that you're one of us.
Yeah.
Join us. Anyway,
thank you
guys. Thank you for continuing to send in questions. Thank you for like letting us keep doing this now that it's been a whole year. We really love seeing you every week. And please stay weird, Misfit.
Yeah, stay weird like Carrie.
Like Carrie and Tori.
Pioneer.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.